Good evening. It is 7 o'clock. It is Wednesday evening. And this is The Invocation of Presence by E.J. Gold. This is our 15th week on this particular book. And as somebody once said to me very recently, and we're just getting started. So part of our work here is to, on these Wednesday evenings, what we're doing is we're taking the literature that has been offered to us and we're getting into it. We're slow reading this thing so that all of us have a chance to just get a different bite on the teaching that has been presented to us by E.J. Gold. And we've been very fortunate. I think I looked on the website the other night, Pat, and we've been through 7 books now.
Whoa.
Okay.
7
books. I was actually looking to see if we had done, in this space, Practical Work on Self, but for some reason it's not up there. That was actually another one we did. Do you know where that is, Ivan? Were you here for that?
That was in the online meetings, wasn't
it? It was, no. Well, I did, in the ashram, I did a course on that, but we also did it with Teresa Dietze, and all of that actually wound up on her website.
Oh.
So I didn't have it on mine. But anyway, the point is this, is that we have a chance to do 2 things. So part of what we're doing is we're going through the literature. Okay, that is just a small aspect of what we're doing, but the thing that is energizing to me is that we're going through the literature together.
Right, as a group.
So we're working
team attention.
In actual group attention. After we work for a while, and after a few minutes of this unbelievably and unknown where the rambling is going, monologue, we wind up getting rid of some of the road dust. And when we get rid of some of the road dust, we can actually be there together. And that starts to invoke the group mind. And the group mind is something that allows us to access spaces that are hinted at in the writings, and then we can work together in that space.
Yes, and we've had this lovely experience just the previous 5 days. We've had this terrific ABD Halloween workshop that was live online for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. And the gathering of folks online and in person here really generated a very fertile environment. So a lot of things have been sort of perking along, growing, coalescing. There's been all this kind of mixture going on. And it seems to me that one of the elements that we have brought, the three of us together when we approach these books, is we actually breathe it a little bit. We breathe in the experience of reading it aloud together. And then when we do our exhale, there's the combination of our shared approach. And that makes for a new ground for everybody to sort of plant their seeds of,
well put.
Practical work with the material. So that just occurred to me this evening. We're actually doing a breathing together when we read these books together.
And part of the invocational process is a form of group breathing. And it's something that Pat and I and others here have worked with. Suddenly the group breathes as one thing, and you can feel and sense the whole of it. And we're going to have a chance tonight. Tonight we've been offered an opportunity to weave a particular quilt that maybe we haven't in the past weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We've made our way somehow all the way to chapter 5.
Mm.
Okay? And you know, we're going to pound ourselves on the back here because we're actually all the way to page 18.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
18 in this book. We're actually going faster than one page per week, okay? Now, this particular chapter, and I've got a question before we get into it, and that's this particular chapter. Ivan, why don't you, Pat, you read the chapter title.
The chapter title, The Invocation of Presence, Chapter 5, Presence, A Serious Confession.
So, you know, I opened my book up to this the other night, and I thought, this is supposed to be about invocation of presence. And then in the middle of it, he drops this thing in about confession. What's that all about? So before we get into the material itself, I want to ask, why did E.J. put a little teeny chapter here about confession and name it a serious confession?
Yes, and we're asking Ivan, correct?
Actually, this is a question directed to Ivan.
Yes.
And go ahead, Ivan, give us the answer, please.
I think I had the wrong upbringing to answer.
You need to speak into the phone.
I'm just saying I think I had the wrong upbringing to answer that question.
Julie, are you online? She might be online, but she's not on the phone. Okay, anybody else? So it's called a serious, the book is called Invocation of Presence. Plopped in the middle of it is a thing about confession, a serious confession.
You cannot proceed without acknowledging where you are.
Hello.
Which is another word for confession. You have to acknowledge where you are. Where you are, who you are, what you are about. And that's called a confession. It's not moralistic. It's not religious. It's not belief or fundamentalist or any of those other words, joking aside. It is not possible to address the question of invoking presence if you have a pretense in your way. And that, to me, that's what this is about.
We've gotten ourselves, that's precisely correct, and we've gotten ourselves to a position where our skill at invoking presence has got to a level where, if I want to go further with it and keep it as a sustained effort, I got to get some stuff out of the way.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's briefly talk, Ivan. I was brought up in the right environment. For this particular conversation, and that is, let's see, what do we mean by confession? If you look at many of this term in many of the world religions, confession exists. It has a different form in different, the Buddhists, the Hindus, but for us as Western European thinkers, it arises out of the Catholic Church. And the confessional there is under the sacrament of penance. Okay, so the sacrament of penance, there are basically three attributes that the Catholics talk about. And the first one is that the penitent, that's the guy telling about it, he comes up and there has to be a sense of remorse. He really means it, in other words. That's going to be an important concept that we're going to come to, that there is a... You can sense that it is not in line with something about your conscience, okay? And that's part of the fabric of what a remorse might be. The second part of it is that you must confess it, and that is in a verb sense, and that in what that means is that you gotta say it. Now, this is a tricky one, and it's one that we're going to study a little bit tonight. Is like in the Catholic, there's no question. You say it out loud. You say it out loud, in that case, in the confessional, to one other person.
Exactly.
Which is the priest. And then the third part is the penance. You pay for your sin. That's the structure that the Catholics brought, and then... The icing on that particular cake is, and then you are absolved of your sins. And how are you absolved of your sins? the priest says so. That's how. The priest says, you're forgiven. And he does that as an intermediary of Christ. And because he's the intermediate, he, in the Catholic Church, there, you are now absolved. I think that's a way of shortchanging the penitent, actually. It's a shortchange, because then you're kind of like, you think, well, I'm done now, right? I'm done with this bad boy.
Yes, you think then so that you're away. You think you can do all these other things.
Then you can do it again, right? And just next week you come before communion, you confess, take communion, you're home free.
What was that, Harry, the last part?
Well, I mean, I didn't mean to interrupt David's talk here, and I apologize for that. It's just that our group discussed this very thing last week in our group here, and I thought we had some interesting insights that you have to have a conviction of sin before you can do anything, and that is you have to realize you're missing the mark, that you really can't do anything because we're constantly identified with a host of different people. We're always internally considering and not externally considering. It's always that other Yahoo who doesn't respect me enough. We always blame others for our problems. These are all missing the mark, and until we do that, having a sense of presence that has any durability at all is a drain.
It's a drain if we don't start addressing these issues. And again, back to the title of the chapter, it's a serious confession. So in this case, EJ is saying, you got to do something here, but you have to have a serious effort at this. It's a serious. Now, in the fourth way and the work that we're doing here, we don't have the concept of sin in the way that the Catholic Church does, a whole list of sins if you do this and that. You know, let's just say that, here's a good example. Let's say you drink a lot of coffee. You got to have your coffee, right? And you start to realize, I can't not have my coffee. Now, I don't think that's a big sin that you would necessarily go to confession in the Catholic Church for, right? But in this environment, when we're talking about mechanicality, you doing that separates from your ability from a sustained effort of invocation of presence. Make sense?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
It's a little simpler than that to me. If there is a form of obstruction which is not acknowledged and recognized, there is no potential for a sustained effort. If there is an obstruction, you cannot proceed. So to me, the use of the word confession implies that there is going to be an acknowledgement of something that you know about. And that's the distinction here. You are actually researching what is the obstruction which is in your way of a sustained effort. And I know that if you're brought up in certain religions, you know, you have these understandings of certain actions or non-actions that classify as a sin. In the Methodist terminology, sin is separation from God, period. Not because of this or because of that, just by definition.
Any separation.
If you are separate from God, you are in sin. What is the recourse to that? Well, in the Christian church, the recourse is Jesus Christ, your personal Savior. In work, what we're saying is, first of all, it has to be brought to light. That's what a confession is, bringing it into the light. So in what you're saying, Harry, that's exactly the course of action that is the remedy. And unfortunately, I think this talk is assuming a certain level of group understanding.
Absolutely.
That is not necessarily contained in this talk. So the beginning, I'm in favor of you speaking, Harry. That's what I'm trying to say. Speak about it, because your group working with it is exactly what has to take place before you can bring yourself to where this group in this book is with their situation.
You know,
okay. Like,
I agree with David on number one and number two. That's exactly what we're still doing. We have a sense of remorse that we can't remember ourselves or activate our presence all the time. We also realize the advantage of confessing this to others, and it has more power if I bring it into this sacred space to say, well, when we tried to do this by doing David's exercise of seeing who's the most conscious in our grocery stores sitting there, I forgot to do it. I forgot to do the exercise the first day. I mean, how conscious is that? And that was very embarrassing, so I tied a string around my finger, and that worked for a couple of days until I forgot to do that. So this is also useful. We just don't confess it to the priest. We confess it to our essential self. Otherwise, we do pretty much the same thing.
The first part is recognizing something. This is self. This arises out of self-observation. So you recognize something, a form of mechanicality. Like Harry, that's a form. He's noticed that he can't observe himself or get into this state of observation when he goes into the store. And he does it over and over again, and he just falls asleep when he goes in there. So that's
pretty
a declaration
it.
Of itself, right?
Yes, so, I wake up when I have to pay my bill. For some reason, I tend to wake up at that point and say, wow, I fell asleep for the whole shopping trip, looking at all
the things. I fell asleep for the whole shopping
trip.
Now, that in itself is a form of self-observation. And then for some reason, he's able to share it out loud here.
Well, it's the truth.
It's simple for you. But there's a form of non-identification with it when you share it out loud with the group.
Such
and it goes back. Pardon?
That is my hope.
Well, then you're actually declaring to the universe and to the group, you're saying, I am not that. Because you're noticing that there's a mechanicality occurring, and you declare it. But I'm not that mechanicality, but I observe it. And here's the big difference of the Catholic Church. You're not absolved at that point. You're not absolved. Your work is to continue to watch that thing. You watch it, you pay attention, and you go, oh, there it is again. For instance, with me, I have a habit, particularly when I meet brand new people, of just smiling, like, and it's I call it a non-organic grin. Okay? I react, and it's kind of like a way of hiding behind the smile. It's like a defensive thing that I throw out there. And I watch that thing, so I go part of it, I work with it, and I say, well, I'm not going to do it. But that's not the answer either. It's more or less to watch it come up, and I'm starting to see sensations in my machine just before it starts to unfold.
Mm-hmm.
As I can see the pressure to do it coming up. Now I want to watch it. You know, I'm going to see somebody tomorrow at a particular time that I haven't seen in a while, and I'm almost certain that it's going to come up. And so I want to watch how the machine does that. And I think that's part of the third triad here, Harry, is how you pay for it. You pay by a continued, you take responsibility for it. because this is what this machine does.
Correct.
This is what this machine does. And it's a little embarrassing to admit that, but I am. That's also the beginning of a cleansing process.
Well, I've been cheating, okay? David. I also must confess that I'm cheating by bringing this up to the group, because by bringing this up in this space, I am much more likely tomorrow when I go to Whole Foods for breakfast to remember it.
Well, so that's the leverage that you can take from the act of confession, which is speaking out loud. Okay?
Yes.
Now, all right, anybody else? Thoughts, observations, subtractions.
I'm not exactly certain.
Okay.
In the description that's in this chapter, which, as far as I recall, only uses the word confession twice, once in the title and once in one sentence, that what we're referring to here, that the goal is not the confession, but the process of accumulating self-awareness around those things which we confess, in order to have additional ammunition for the furnace that we use to remind ourselves to invoke our presence. Do you see where I am?
Yeah.
Because the impact of having this come sort of out of nowhere in the book, and then where it ends up at the end of the chapter, is it's a long distance. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
And so where I see this is when the first question is asked. May I read the first question?
Sure.
When the first question is asked, G asked, how is it that the machine is able to surprise us with unexpected actions that we somehow, more than just occasionally, find ourselves doing things we never intended to do? That's the question that's posed. And there's several iterations of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he formulates a question that can be used as an exercise. In what ways exactly have your machine surprised you against your higher intentions? And then he says, if this question is to be used for real work, you must answer completely honestly, not considering possible personal embarrassment or the damage to your precious feelings of security, vanity, or imaginary self-esteem. It is a real confession in every sense of the word, and a real candidate for work must someday answer. For the honesty and authenticity of this answer given to the group today, that is where I get kind of hung up, because
okay. The
qualities that we know about for ourselves in terms of self-observation or acknowledgement or telling the group about it or any of those things have much more to do with the results of the practice of giving the confession in a serious way as a candidate for the work in front of others, because of what follows after it. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, let's look at that paragraph then. Okay. What do you think he means? Let's go through it. I mean, that was a key. That is a key. It is a real confession in every sense of the word, and a real candidate for the work must someday answer for the honesty and authenticity of this answer given to the group today.
Exactly.
What is he instructing at that moment? What is the environment that he's in? What is he suggesting to the group to do at that time.
Take the question as an exercise for the group.
To
answer. Yes.
In what ways exactly
yes.
have your machines surprised you against your higher
intentions?
So I'm taking that to mean you caught your machine asleep in some mechanical
right.
something or another.
Yeah, you were surprised. You didn't know it was going to do that or not do whatever it was.
And it did.
And it did.
Yeah, along with the part about your higher intentions. I mean, it's a public acknowledgement, or let's say in the circle of your group, it's an acknowledgement that you specifically violated your own principles for yourself.
Precisely. What do you mean by public acknowledgement?
Well, just this idea that he's talking about a group exercise and saying that, it's that there's having withholds, we could call it, or having a secret, having, some area that you're not willing to share with your fellow travelers, voyagers, is going to be enough to hold you back from continuing with the practice, with practices.
Okay.
I think that's what he's stating here in this chapter.
Well, it seems to me we call for three things. It says, in what ways exactly? So you have to have detail. It has to be precise. It has to be specific. It's not, in general, of course, I'm just a fool and an idiot, blah, blah, blah. No, no. Exactly and specifically, I'm a fool and an idiot in this way,
exactly.
At this time, under these conditions. And it has been a surprise to me that my machine does that. That's the second part. So there's the detail that it was unknown or unaware or surprised or hidden or whatever. And thirdly, that it is against your higher intentions. That, I think, is the part where I'm stuck. I think that's where I'm stuck. Because I never thought about the relationship between my higher intentions being compromised by those surprising things that my machine would do. Until they do it. So I never think about it beforehand.
Correct.
I don't consider it sort of
right.
like, just let's make a flow chart, and they'll say, well, these are the things that my machine... No, it never comes up like that until you actually have the backdrop of the action itself that you have recorded in specific and how it was a surprise and that it was against your higher intentions. It's massive. It is global. It is, I don't know, whatever those other words are that imply how...
So, I think that there's...
Yeah.
Okay, a few chapters ago, EJ was in the writing that said, you feel... that your position, you're in desperate conditions. You see yourself, your sleep is in desperate conditions because you are asleep in this mechanicality. I think this chapter is perfectly placed here. It's perfectly placed because now we're along enough that we can grasp it. We can begin to see because our higher intentions are starting to become a real everyday thing for us. It's an everyday thing, and then this happens. And in a sense, it's a surprise every time, but there it is. It's a surprise. So I'm back to the thing about what's the form of because you're in a group, what is the form that the exercise takes? It is not theoretical. as you so well put it, it's a small, probably a very small thing. I guess what I'm suggesting is, does not this imply that the form is to declare it in a group, in a safe group, in this kind of a group?
We have some comments.
Go ahead.
So Piff says, that's not cheating. That is borrowing necessity from the group.
Good.
And Tanja says, thank you. That's what he's hoping for. And then Piff continues, yes, my machine has definitely surprised me in this. Injury to the flesh and blood body has become a distraction. With chronic pain, it is pretty insistent. I am guilty on all three. Thank you, Patricia, for this spot-on declaration of how this process works, not with Tianjo. And then Tiff says, right, it is every part of every center involved, global, as Tianjo says, or Patricia says.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Well, the words that are used in the description of the paragraph that come after the question indicate that it is public, because it says, if this question is to be used for real work, you must answer completely, honestly, not considering possible personal embarrassment. My understanding is embarrassment is, generally speaking, because
public.
Others would see you. Or the damage to your precious feelings of security, vanity, or imaginary self-esteem. It is a real confession in every sense of the word, and a real candidate for work must someday answer for the honesty and authenticity of this answer given to the group today.
There you go.
So it's like you offer it up to the group. It's kind of like ante up, you know? It's kind of like, you know, the pot is asking for another contribution, ante up, you know, in the poker game. You put down a couple of coins for a few cards, and then, you know, you want to stay in the game. You got to put in more. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like ante up.
The way I see that is you are actually giving to the group.
Mm-hmm.
You're giving it up to the group. And in a sense, you're absolving yourself with a capital S of that. I am not that. The machine does this. When this occurs, this machine does this. And everybody's going, oh, wow. You give it up and free yourself, literally, big S, from it. You're uncoupling from the identification with it, because then you have the power to declare it. You're too identified, you just can't declare it. You can't even see it. So I think it is a public statement, and EJ has set out the rules of honesty in this case.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you have to be honest with yourself in this. Yourself.
So another thought about that, the description you've just given, if someone has as their model for going to confession the Catholic model or the Hollywood Catholic model,
right,
where you go into a chamber which shields you from being seen directly or known directly,
correct,
by the other party.
Right.
And so you're not face to face. And you have, you know, a private box in which what you say will remain there, won't get told anyplace else.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely antithetical.
Absolutely.
To that. In every way, the situation, the scenario, the methodology, and the purpose. But just in that line of, like, how is it given? What you were saying a moment before was the self, as in capital S, offers from observing the machine this piece of surprise data, and how it's a hindrance.
Because that self...
Because the self is not invested,
there you go,
in that piece
you
that it's
it.
Giving away. So it's offering it out. And it's offering it in an environment in which the collection of such pieces of data reflect back for the group on the availability of a true confession, as in self confess of small self, something like that.
Because the true self can speak from higher intentions, and therefore it can point to these elements and speak them out.
Harry?
I'm still processing David's comment. So it's the,
go to
it's
the, next.
The essential being who is pointing this out to us.
That's correct. The essential being is what is
pointing
this out to us. The essential being is saying, oh, look, look at what the machine does. Oh, my gosh. And in my case, I do it over and over and over and over again. It's still fascinating to watch. Like, you know, it's like, how do I do it every single time? My goodness.
Videra says, my machine has surprised me by smiling insecurely when I feel certain inside.
That's an example of a public confession.
Yes, thank you.
So if she was here, you know, there's a kind of embarrassing to say that. Like you say, you know, like, oh, she, that smile is just because she's doing this is mechanical like that. People could talk to about her. Her essential self doesn't care because it's gone, here, I've given it. I've now given it away. Because in her inner self, she's saying, I am not that. But I can point to that. So let's read that first, starting with the first full paragraph of the next page. Do you want, either one of you want to read that?
What do you mean, the group?
The group.
Mm-hmm. The group, under his direct supervision, proceeded to assemble possible categories in which answers to this question might fall. One, the oh no, not again syndrome in general. As in, what? Don't tell me I'm doing this again. For example, just finding oneself in bed with someone one did not intend to have sex with, which G had been heard to call the falling between the sheets category.
It just happened.
Right. I can see where higher intentions might not have been very active in this situation.
Two. Keep going.
Two, oral sphincter addictions. A, delicious foods. B, alcohol, cigarettes, and drugs. Three, impulse buying. Four, negative manifestations. Five, procrastination in general. Six, booby manifestations. Finding yourself with your finger up your nostril after having sworn to yourself you would never pick your nose in public ever again.
Well, that's it. I've had enough class.
See you later, Harry.
Oh, he drills us. He nails all of it.
Nails all of it. And so the process, this is a chapter about freedom. This is a chapter about freedom because we can free ourselves because we have a technology to do it. And we have a group that is willing to accept our observations, and it knows that if you're here, there's a higher intention that is at work. Okay? Let me ask you something, even though we're just about, I mean...
No, we're not.
Let me ask you something. So is there anybody that would like to say anything at this point?
Oh, hand the phone over.
Dan, hang on. You got to have a phone in your hand, brother.
One of the cute things about confessing is to people that you know is that they already know.
Yes, indeed.
And so it's not that desperate or you don't know. You know, you're an actor. You feel like you can act your way through this, but in reality, they know everything. You know, they can hear it in your tone of voice, and they can watch you. So it's taking the pressure off them as well. You know.
Good.
That's
really
nice.
Good point.
That's very
nice point.
Great point.
Yeah.
When you are working together in a group, which we have different forms that takes from time to time. You start to know your partners and your colleagues' mechanical properties. You know that if this, and this occur, this person is going to do this. Mm-hmm. And as Jim is telling us, when you confess that to the group, in a sense, you do free them from having to cover for you, in a sense. They don't have to cover for you anymore because at that point, they become a colleague with you.
Mm-hmm.
They're your colleague and they're saying, I'm going to say something about Pat over here, okay? We've been working together for a long time now. And she'll come to dinner sometimes and she's right on the edge. She's right on the edge. But this is somebody who goes up to Chico, California and drives like, safely, but like a madman, for an hour and a half to get here through dark traffic and whatnot, and she, you know, she's all like this, and you never know where that's going to go. And she confesses it, but I also know with certainty that when she gets into this space, poof, it's gone. I am certain of that. That's her skill set. That's a great skill set that she has.
And since we're commenting on some of our teamwork together, this number six, booby manifestations, which has a particular spelling, B-O-O-B-Y, booby manifestations.
Oh, no. Is she going to say something about me?
No. My close friend Morgan Fox and I were team members years and years and years, okay, four decades ago, at St. George's Church on Alta Street in Grass Valley. So that's late 70s. And she was explaining this to me one day, way before this was written. She said, you got to know that the minute you do this, he's going to open the door and see you. You got to know that. No matter what it is, as soon as you start to do that, just remember, you're going to be seen. And I always think about that when I look at these booby manifestations, finding yourself. It's like, what, you didn't notice on the way up there that you were going to do it? No, you don't see anything. All of a sudden, you're like, So part of this has to do with interrupting the surprise. You interrupt the surprise that would overtake you. And the glory of that is that energy, that awareness, that attention, that whatever this thing is that you have accessible to you, you actually get to have a small, tiny bit of use of that mechanical manifestation. That's empowering, to use the modern language.
Yeah.
That's empowering. Well, I guess I did know something. I didn't feel at all at home with this chapter when we started.
Yeah, it's kind of a strange interruption, but after I worked with it for the last several days, I realized exactly why it's here right now. Mm-hmm. You know, why it's here right now, because we need a mechanism as we get better at our craft of invoking. We need a mechanism. Whoops, I keep running into this. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with it? Confess it, give it to the group. Give it away. Because if you share it with the group, you're giving it away, and you can't hold on to it. So it's precious to you. It's part of the reason you hold on to it. It's precious to you.
Do we want the end?
Well, yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that if there was a space, if there was anybody other than the people that have shared that would like to share,
yes, please.
That you are welcome to.
Yes,
say what you would like.
It's a confession forum availability.
If you would
care
to.
We'll take your call right now.
Just dial the 900 number.
Okay. Dan is starting to giggle. Speak now, Dan.
Oh, this is. There probably is a 900 confession line somewhere. So Jenny Gott says, I confess I was listening but buying stuff on Facebook as he read that.
Oh my goodness.
Thank you, Jenny, for letting us know.
And Cookie says, interrupting the surprise. Excellent, thank you.
Yeah.
Good. Very nice.
Okay. This is always a opportunity in this group, for anybody that would like to share something. Because if you get to the point where it's waiting on your ability to do the invocation of presence, here's a form where you can unleash yourself from it, if it's something you'd like to do. Okay? Yes, and now I'd like to head into the end parts, because there's some very important things. So did you want to read? Was that?
I'm going to enjoy listening.
Okay, good. Continuing then. Earlier, G had given us a useful clue to self-invocation, mentioning that if something periodically self-arising in the machine were truly habitual, We must not say we would never do it again. Isn't that interesting? Don't say that. That a habit would only entrench itself more firmly if we tried to disallow it, but that it could serve as a powerful sensing centrum remembering factor to help us remember as our attention wanders aimlessly through daydreams, fantasies, periods of involuntary self-oblivion, to invoke the presence of our presence into the present. In this sense, as a remembering device which works because it contains definitive or definite noticeable sensations. How's that? Using sensations of some form of remorse, our habits, and even our complete lack of authority over the organic machine become invocational tools for the evolution of our being. G also suggests that we ask ourselves why we make vows we know we cannot keep and which we secretly know we never really intended. So these are just remembering, you know, factors. It's just help us remember their devices. And if you observe them, you're going to see that there's all kinds of energetic sensations build up, and then you do it. A few years ago, just about every time often, there's so much tension and energy in a certain way in the class. On the way home, I'd go to the gas station, the janitor or something, and I'd buy a donut. Had to buy a donut. It was like paying me for doing this, working this hard, right?